Hello and welcome to episode 26 of That Yoga Woman's podcast, a podcast where yogis, yoga teachers and studio owners share stories of their lives on and off the mat. I'm Jules Buchanan, a yoga teacher and your host. So episode 26, I only release an episode every fortnight, so do the maths and it works out to be a year's worth of podcasting. Thank you so much to all my interviewees and of course to you guys for listening. If you enjoy the podcast, please can you take a moment to rate it, write a review and subscribe if you listen through Apple or Spotify and stuff like that, as this really helps other people to find the podcast and also it gives me a little warm and fuzzy glow. So thank you's done, let's crack on with the episode. This week I'm talking to Kelly Hopkinson. Kelly's based in Milton Keynes and she says she's many things to many people, which I think a lot of us is something a lot of us can relate to. If we rewind, travelling took up much of Kelly's 20s, so we'll find out more about what that entailed. She then jumped heart first into being a primary school teacher, so I'll be asking her what life was like and how that career path was for her. Becoming a single working mum of two girls wasn't part of her plan, yet it became one of her life-defining moments, so I'll definitely be asking her more about that and the impact that it's had on her. Kelly is now a yoga and mindfulness teacher, establishing the Be Well Club, which is a monthly membership of weekly yoga classes, on-demand content and wellness tools to make life a little easier. I also want to talk to Kelly about her public speaking. She did a TEDx talk in 2018 on self-care, which has racked up almost 114,000 views on YouTube, which I think is pretty awesome. A chat with Kelly wouldn't be complete without asking her about her friendship of a kind, almost a sisterhood really, with Christine Blair, who has been on this podcast in episode 6. They've got such support for each other, championing each other and working together. It really is an inspiration. And Kelly also is owner to one of the cutest kittens in the world, Dave. So I'll be asking her to share some of his antics with us as she's been featuring him in some of her online yoga classes for her students. I really hope you enjoyed listening to our conversation. So Kelly, thank you and welcome to That Yoga Woman's podcast. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you for having me.
Oh, you're welcome. So, Kelly, we need to really start by talking about Dave because Dave, for the listeners, is like your gorgeous, cute kitten that you've had from, I want to say birth, but that's not quite right, but from like a tiny wee kitten. Can you just describe him to the listeners and just tell us a bit about him? When did you get him? Why did you get him? And why is he called Dave?
I'm pretty sure that's why quite a few people come to my classes for like little hints of seeing Dave jump over me. So I got him when he was 3 months old, and that was because somebody came to my class and I was like, oh my gosh, what a cute kitten. And I'm not a cat person. I'm not an animal person. This is probably going to put people off me. But I really loved this. I loved her kitten. She lived in London, obviously. And she's like, oh, I think she's got a brother. So I was just made like a couple of, she sent me a message and stuff. And it turns out the brother was like completely black with this little white tip on his tail. So I was sold. I think when I thought about having a cat, which was only the month previous, never ever thought about it before. I always thought that I would have a black cat. And I just wanted to call him Dave. It isn't after anybody. It's not, there was not a big story behind it. It was just, that's who I thought I would have. That's the cat I thought I would have. Not that I ever thought I would have one. Everyone was surprised. My mum looked at me as like I was a little bit, I'd lost my mind a little bit. But it came off the back actually of sort of a little dating situation ending. And oh look, he's just coming in now to join us. No, his ears were burning. And it was not in that kind of, oh, I want, you know, something to make me feel less lonely, anything like that. It was just that would be really nice. That would feel nice to have a kitten in the mix. I was completely underprepared for such a kitten.
Yeah, because he's been quite a feature in your classes, I gather.
Yeah, and I think it's just that typical thing of your expectations and that potential of what something can be like, this dreamy me and my cat yoga compared to the reality of you know, him joining in, often biting me because he was a kitten. I didn't know anything about cats. So once I remember having some flowers in my yoga shed, and someone sent me a little chat message saying, you need to get rid of those because they're poisonous to kittens. I was like, oh, so I saw that, popped them outside the door. So I was learning as I was going. And sometimes I just he couldn't go out straight away. So sometimes he joined us for classes. Sometimes I needed the day off, you know, of him potentially biting my face, which he did a few times. So
I didn't realize like kittens bit or cats bite, do they?
He's a really feisty one. So he was just a really feisty kitten. I don't think all kittens are the same. I have no experience, so I don't know. And he was tiny and cute. And honestly, it was in my mind, you know, when you just imagine the photos and the videos that could come off of the back of that, and then the reality was just not quite the same. So most of the time he joined us and everybody loved him. I could see people taking photos. So rather than actually doing the sequence that I'd suggested, they were just watching him climb all over my back. So yeah, he's quite a feature, but he's nearly one now.
Really? Already?
Yeah, so this month the girls are very excited to give him a little birthday party, which he'll be very unimpressed with.
What would that involve?
Well, I don't know. I mean, they have these expectations and imaginations of like a beautiful, not teddy bear picnic, but a cat version. I'm not sure he'll be interested unless there's like a load of food and stuff to chew.
Have you given him any dreamies yet?
Yes.
They're so bad, aren't they? They're so bad, they're good.
Yeah, but he's great now. He goes out and he's quite a panther. He's quite a force stalking around the house. But he's actually really affectionate and he just wants to be near me most of the time. I mean, he's just stalked off now because I think he knows that I'm busy. But usually he's really close, like a magnet.
Oh, that is nice. He's super cute. Thank you for coming on the podcast. I wanted to say I'm a bit of a fan of you, Kelly. You strike me as a really genuine woman who's not afraid to put out there, how hard life can be, just general life. So I feel like I know you from your Instagram, although I don't really know you. So that's it's a bit odd. But especially as a single mum, like what you're saying feels really authentic. Can you just tell me a bit about that and where that comes from?
So again, it was one of those things, you know, I didn't plan to be single. I planned to, you know, do the, you know, again, that maybe idealized, dreamy version of what things might look like. And then the girls were really young. They were sort of 2 and 4 when I became a single mum. And I have to look at it like that now. Whereas before I saw myself as, you know, this stuff happened to me. And, you know, it was really negative and I saw a lot of the negative side of it. And it was, you know, really, you know, heartbreaking, but not in that quite beautiful kind of way, in that ugly, squash your heart, you know, kind of way. And it changed everything. But, you know, so the girls were little and they're now not, you know, 10 and 8. So they were only 2 and 4. And I did this, you know, I split up with their dad and moved in. I stayed in the house actually for quite a long time, longer than I thought. I don't know if you ever do this, but in my mind when I'm recapping stuff, I'm like, yeah, and I was there for a few months and then I went here and then I did this and this and this. And actually when I looked back, because I reflected quite a bit over the Christmas time for the whole year, and it was 15 months that I was there with them in our house, you know, on my own with them, navigating this incredible but so challenging and difficult way of being a single mum, but also then communicating with this other person that, you know, hurt, you know, everything hurt a lot, but you're still communicating and doing everything for the children, but then also remembering yourself in all of that. And then, you know, from that, moving in with my parents, and again I thought, I think that was a couple of months, but that was another 9. And it's just, I don't know. It was a big chunk of time. Whereas I think in my mind, I wanted to heal and fix myself so much that I sped things up quite a lot. And that isn't what I talk about. That isn't what I advocate at all. You can't miss out certain parts, but I wanted to. So I did all of the things at speed to try and feel better. And then bought a house and found a house, got within that time quite confident in my single mumness. Sometimes it was just plain ridiculously hard, And then that even took 3 months of renovating it, taking everything out, putting new stuff back in, enlisting literally most of my friends' husbands to come and help, because by that time a lot of my friends had kids, so the husbands chose to come and help me rather than look after the kids, and my parents and their mates. And it was a real, that it takes a village. It was one of those kind of experiences. So
must have been good to have had all that support.
Yeah, that was a real eye-opener, actually. Of, I knew I always had a load of support, but support that I could actually lean on. I had a lot of people around me that would actually drop things and come and, you know, help me. And I did the same for them. I think that was another reminder when it comes to friendships and relationships in general, that real two-way thing, leaning on people when you need to. So that creates that slight imbalance, but then it can go the other way and you're there for other people. So yeah, I really felt that, having people around me.
Mm. So let's go back to your youth, if we may. You spent, well, I read that you spent a lot of time traveling. Are you from Milton Keynes originally?
Yes. Well, not really sort of nearby, but my parents traveled a lot when, you know, they were, they met at school, bless them, and they're still, you know, rocking it now.
Wow.
So they traveled a lot when they were, you know, a couple, and then came back to England to kind of have me, but then took me back again to the Middle East. That's where they were based. So I spent a lot of time there at international schools, and my brother did as well. And then we settled back in Switzerland too, fell in there, and then settled back here in Milton Keynes when I was seven. So started school then, me and my brother. And it's funny, the school that I went to when I was that age, that primary school, my girls go there now. It's weird, but it's really nice.
Are there any of the same teachers there?
There were a couple of the same staff until very recently. Yeah, there was a librarian, and I was like, and because of my surname, and I had two brothers, which were far more possibly interesting than me. Everybody knew both of them, and I was their sister, even though I was the oldest. So yeah, they always seemed to know, oh yeah, okay, and they knew my brothers rather than me. But that's fine.
Aww. So it was, would you say traveling was like in your blood then at that point?
I guess so. I do tell my parents that often when they're, you know, especially through my 20s, when I then started going off, and I was like, well, this is your fault because you started it when I was younger. Yeah. So they let me go. They had that ethos or whatever it is, belief system, I think, that they needed to let me go and do all of these experiences, even though I knew there was a couple of times they were very much, I'm not sure this is the right thing to do, but we're here for you.
Yeah, so they let you go and make your own mistakes, sounds like.
Too much, yeah.
Absolutely. So where did you go on your travels, and how old were you?
So I worked in gyms throughout my sort of 20s, and then by about, I think it was about 26. I'm really rubbish with that, you know, like when people can say they did something in a certain year.
Yeah.
I'm really rubbish. I can't do that. So when I was around 26, I had two uncles that worked in Florida on motor yachts, these big fancy yachts. And they were a lot younger than my dad. So I kept in touch with them, and they were like, why don't you just come and work over here? You know, in that flipper kind of way. And I was like, all right, then maybe I will. So I was working as a gym instructor, and I taught all these classes, and my boyfriend at the time was the same. So we both sold stuff. I was living at home anyway, but sold cars and things, and went over there without really having a clue of what we were getting ourselves into or knowing what we were doing. We had a letter to get us through customs to say that we were working on a boat, and then we had to find a job. So over there living with family, and ended up finding, you know, working on one of their boats, which was just quite amazing.
So what sort of thing did you do when you say working on the boat? Like, was it a tourist type of boat taking people out on fishing trips, or what kind of boat was it and what were you doing?
No, I would have probably met a very different kind of person if that had been the case. This was a private motor yacht, so there's a lot of money out there, which I hadn't really experienced until I experienced this life. So it was very much the women worked as inside cleaning,
right,
making the food, not even making the food, because the chef, that was mainly, you know, that could be guys or all women. So the women basically worked inside, and the guys worked outside. And that was kind of how it was, which is what happened. We were both on there living in a bunk bed in a very small cabin, not the greatest for a relationship of any kind. And that's what we did. So we looked after the family that owned the boat and whoever they brought on with them. And yeah, so it was a very, I don't know, it was an incredible time, because when they weren't on there and we weren't in our whites, tending to their every need, we got to do all of the stuff that they kind of do, but in a much more fun way, with the beach bars and the jet skiing and everything.
Oh, that's amazing.
Well, it's interesting because I remember Facebook kind of becoming a bit of a thing while I was out there. Instagram wasn't around, or I didn't know about it. So it wasn't like today. I find it quite interesting what my, you know, if I were to do that now, I'd have shared it, you know, like crazy, but there was not much evidence of this time of mine out there, like the odd photo that I get sent from a friend sometimes. So very, a big reminder of, you know, that living in the moment. I remember it all, but I don't have much photographic evidence, which is
fine.
Yeah,
it's funny, isn't it? I think that's, I'm in the same boat with that. Like, there's memories and you remember things and what went on, but like, yeah, photos just weren't around, especially because I was very late to Facebook, so I didn't have only like recently in the last couple of years. So that sounds like it was a mega time, like living the life of Riley. Okay, difficult living conditions, but you know, a youngster's life, really. That's what it sounds like.
Yeah, definitely.
How long did you do that for?
We had a visa for a year, so we did that for a year, just under actually. And yeah, it was an incredible experience. It really was. In hindsight, you know, again, it was. So did that for a year, and then and then moved on to something else, because I don't know, then a different, not even an opportunity, but just a different idea.
Were you still traveling at this point, or did you just go back to Milton Keynes, or did you just go elsewhere?
So we had this big idea. This was the thing. So we were in Florida, and you get this kind of, I can do anything when you're in different places, you know, going on the boat to the Bahamas and Costa Rica. They were the main ones. And then coming back and basing ourselves in Florida for about a month, seeing if we wanted to decide whether we go on a different boat or, you know, just come up with a new plan. We came up with a new plan. again, neither of us were in this yachting industry, so we didn't really know either what we were doing. But we... I came back to England actually for a little while, because in amongst there, I think there was a breakup, a very dramatic one. I remember it well, a dramatic one in which I reversed the charges to my parents. Do you remember when that's what we did on the phone? Because mobile phones just weren't really a thing, to say that I was flying back from Miami Airport. Again, it sounds much more glamorous than it was, because it hadn't worked out. It was all very dramatic. So I was flying back, which, you know, obviously never did they say I told you so, but they did. They were like, okay, we're here, that's cool. There was a little bit of time back in England, and then we, you know, it came back together again, because again, that's maybe what you do in your 20s when you don't have many responsibilities. And we thought we would go to Spain and try the, you know, the Mediterranean season over there on a boat. Decided once we there, didn't get back on a boat again. And actually, this is probably where I started finding my yoga, because we didn't work on a boat. We just stayed put in Mallorca, and we got jobs. I was a nanny, a cleaner. What else did I do? Though, you know, some more kind of jobs like that. And it was fine. And there was a gym, and that's where I started to go to yoga more frequently. Whereas before, I kind of just went whenever we were traveling around, or I used to work in all the gyms. So I'd pop along to some sometimes. But, you know, it's not like I found yoga at a young age and had that. It was probably when I got, you know, more consistent practice. I was probably around 29, you know, 28, 29. So,
So you came back to the UK, and when did the girls arrive?
I guess we stayed there for about, a couple of years. Again, I get all my years a bit muddled, but a couple of years, 3 years nearly in Mallorca, came back.
Why did you come back? Because I love Mallorca, and I think it's just, whereabouts were you?
So we were near where the touristy stuff is, and I always have to put that in to go, okay, we were near that, but we weren't there, and it's not all like that. It's beautiful. Yeah. So between Palma and the noisy, you know, Magaluf resorts and stuff.
Yeah.
So near to the airport, and it was just beautiful, and I loved everything about living there. And I got friendly with like different people, and one of them was a school teacher. So I thought, I know, again, you know, these ideas, I know what I'll do. I could be a school teacher, come back and do my training and go back there and work in an international school, because I was like, I would quite like her life. That would be lovely.
Yeah, bit more reliable work, better pay. Yeah.
And there was never a point at that time where I was like, I want to be a yoga teacher. That was very much, I always worked in gyms and things, and like a primary school teacher, that would be solid. That would be good. That would be consistent. And I would like to do it by the beach, but you can't train out there. There's no sort of training. Or there wasn't when I was there. So we both had the plan of coming back and both doing a bit of training and then going back again.
Yeah.
And then as, so I did come back and I did get on a teacher training program. And in that time I did my teacher training actually, which is, looking back on that, that was a really hard year. But, you know, I didn't have children. I lived at home. I lived with my parents. So in hindsight, that was a very easy time to do that kind of thing. So I did that for a year. I did it because I had a degree already. I could add on a year and then I would be a teacher, you know, a school teacher. Wow, brilliant. And in that time, that training year, I think my boyfriend and I finally called it a day after the dramatic breakups and flying back from different places. And so that was kind of the end of that whilst being a school teacher. And then you have to stay and do it for a little bit longer. I still had this idea though that I could go and take my teaching abroad as a school teacher, because I also thought, again, these expectations of mine, I thought I could just learn Spanish if I wanted to enough. I could use the little bit that I knew already, and I could teach some Spanish. I could learn some Spanish, that's fine. So I could teach over there. But it didn't quite work out because, you know, meeting somebody new and having children pretty quickly meant that I stayed put.
But that's so, like you say, they're their expectations, but I see that as like you've got no limits. Like I would approach that as like, oh, I can't do that. Whereas you're like, yeah, why wouldn't I be able to? That's a great like attitude to have, isn't it? You know, people would aspire to have more of that in their lives than the kind of negative sort of putting the boundaries up thoughts.
Yeah. And I guess I didn't do that. I did even when, you know, this started happening and knew that we didn't have much couple time. We were only together kind of maybe a year before the whole, you know, the kids thing, which, as anyone knows with kids, it just changes everything. With the best will in the world, it changes everything. So even then though, I still thought, okay, well, this is not that this is temporary, but this part of my life based in Milton Keynes, you know, with a teacher, you know, being a school teacher, I can take that. I can take that away and I can take it to what I wanted to do, which was to be a school teacher by a beach. And I taught a lot of gym classes, and there was like little hints of yoga. I never taught yoga or anything close to that while I was in Spain and Mallorca, but I then thought, okay, and then I can do that. I can add that in as well. So yeah, I had a lot of, they were big dreams. They really were. And I made quite a lot of little steps towards those. That final part, though, of actually being in a different country, doing kind of what I was doing here, didn't quite work out, didn't quite get there.
So you were teaching in Milton Keynes at primary school with the girls and then became a single mum. What was that like at the time, if you don't mind talking about it?
Yeah, so being a full-time school teacher, I only had a couple of years of that life, and I loved it. I loved being a school teacher. I loved the team that I was in. I truly loved everything about it. I liked exploring what I was going to teach in my classes, and I liked putting, you know, I liked being observed by people. I liked having trainee teachers in with me. And then when I went back part-time, I found every part that I used to love difficult. Every part of it I found, like being part-time, I found hard. I found it hard sharing a class with somebody, not knowing the children as much as I did. That it was that comparison and comparing back, and I wasn't the same person. My mind didn't work in the same way. It could close off like the parent bit and then be as a school teacher, but there was that, you know, I had to be at a certain place, I had to leave at a certain time to pick up kids and take them to places, think about them often, you know, if they weren't very well, if just something was going on. So I didn't feel good about, you know, I didn't feel as good as I did when I was a full-time school teacher. There were moments of it. I got my confidence back. It was a confidence thing, I think. I didn't feel like I lived up to expectations or the other people that were there in my team. It was a very big school, so there was a lot of opportunities to compare yourself with other people.
Wow. So what happened as far as the teaching goes? Because that must have been really traumatic to feel, after having loved it so much, to then be a bit more out of love with it.
It was falling out of love with my profession and this thing that I thought that I wanted to do for a long time. It was very steady and secure. And to be honest, anytime I spoke to anybody about, you know, what did I do, if I was meeting new people, you got to respect being a primary school teacher and you're doing good, and that is also steady and it's stable, and oh, you get the school holidays. And I kind of bought into that quite a lot. You know, I wanted to please. I'm a terrible people pleaser, a recovering one. That's what I'm putting myself
in. I like that.
Yeah. And the big emotional, I suppose, impact that it had on my job was that the girl's dad was a teacher at the same school. That's how we met. That's how we had a lot of our social situations and a lot of our friendships were there. And finding being a mum, I found being a mum really hard, a new mum. You know, it's not like I took to it really simply and easily. A lot of the things that I found difficult when it came to being a school teacher, I found those little things about being a mum really challenging, really hard. And combining the two, and then also a relationship that then was beginning to fall apart, and that took a while of the falling took a while. It was all too much. And I tried things. I tried leaving the school and going to a different school. I did two different ones. And I think combining that with the going through the process of breaking up and finding my feet again was really difficult.
So what, it's interesting that you said you tried different schools. So it was like you'd think that might have mended things, but it just wasn't. At least you gave it a try. Sounds like you really worked hard to keep it going.
Yeah, and I'm a fixer. I want to fix things. I wanted to fix myself when I, you know, during a breakup, and rather than giving myself time. And I wanted to do the same with school teaching. I didn't want to leave because that was quite massive to do that. So going to another school, I completely changed the age group that I was teaching. Because again, I went to a psychic one, not psychic, a palm reader once at a festival, and he described me as stubborn. And my initial thing was, I'm not stubborn, not stubborn at all. And it's recently I found that I really am. And in things like these sort of situations, I truly am pretty stubborn, because I don't want to fail at anything. I would rather, this was in a relationship as well as in a school teaching career, I would rather do everything I could, knowing that I tried everything, and then went, okay, that was enough, rather than what ifs. You know, I think that was one of my biggest fears, regret it. You know, what if I'd have just done that or tried that or listened a bit more or just had a break or something. So going to another school, it was great, and they were so supportive. It was a really great school. It was brand new, and I was there from the beginning. And I was quite an experienced teacher by this point. So I felt like I had a lot to give, and tried different year groups. It was difficult, but made very good friends there, and always gave my all to what I was doing. I went down from full time, then 3 days, and then 2 days. And then I think I went up to a little bit more and then back again. And so I did try it all. And then in the end, I always had this little niggle of yoga teaching. And I went to White Spaces, the big studio here, and I went to them when my youngest was really little, and I was going through a really hard time anyway in that time, and I wanted to do my teacher training then. And they knew me really well, and they had to have a really honest conversation with me to say, I don't think you're ready. It's hard, you know, your daughter is 6 months and like 2.5 or whatever it was, and you don't actually have a consistent practice. And when it was written down on paper, they could print out my practice, and I thought, okay, yeah, in my mind, I did. And I didn't. It wasn't like a regular, it was very up and down. So I had to wait, and I was very upset, carried on as a school teacher. And then the right time, you know, happened, and I was due to start my teacher training for yoga in the March, and the girl's dad and I broke up in the January, like the final, that was it. He moved out kind of thing. And that was when I really questioned what on earth I was doing. Like, was this the right time to do something like this? At that time, I think I wasn't working. I was working, yeah, part-time. So it was all very, lots of questions. I think it was a real questioning time.
And what I've read that you think that teachers don't look after themselves as like that's, we'll come on to it in a little while, but you, that's quite an important thing for you, I think, from reading what you've said in the past. Do you think with hindsight that you, that was a bit of issue with your own career about the self-care or support or that kind of thing?
Yeah, I think so. I think we teach what we most need to learn ourselves. And that's definitely true in my teaching. And I left sort of that time that I was at that new school and this big school, and it was new. And I was, you know, I didn't have all of the stuff from the other school. You know, I didn't bring all that with me. So I was quite fresh and, you know, as far as everybody else was concerned as well. And I really noticed I could take a step back because I was 2 days, and a part of my role became taking care of staff well-being. I mean, I kind of created that role for myself, Jules, I'm not gonna lie, because I really wanted to do it. So I kind of added that into my foundation teacher teaching as well, because I truly wanted to help. So I did a lot of stuff outside of my hours, and because I could see it, I think, from my yoga teacher training that I did do it. Even though I was kind of in hindsight, you know, I was during that time, I was living at home and navigating this. Okay, what do we do with the children and then splitting our time? And, you know, it was quite a time, but I did do it. And then coming out of it with this qualification, as well as starting to teach classes, as well as still being a primary school teacher, that I could almost like feel people's stress and anxiety. And I think because of maybe the job that they knew that I was doing, people, you know, they saw me as somebody that they could confide in or ask for advice and help. And I could really see how teachers generally didn't take care of themselves, their baseline level of self-care in the school working time anyway, it might be very different outside of school, was very low. Their baseline was very low. So if anything seemed to, and this is, I'm me generalizing, I know, but if anything came along, for example, report writing time or data was needed, or any of these big, those working in schools know that there are these times in the school year of just stress. And it's almost like we expect that stress, so we endure it and we live through it. And that didn't need to be the case. I found that a lot of myself included, when I was in that teaching time, lived for the weekend or lived for when you left school, whatever time that was, 4 o'clock, 5 o'clock, 6 o'clock in the evening, or lived for the time where you could shut off your laptop, because, you know, or finished marking your books. And we were just powering through, getting through, you know, to that time, whether it was just to have a breath or to breathe or to lay down. And that isn't the way to live. That's when you really start disconnecting from your everyday life. And I found I was doing it with the juggle of parent stuff and the logistics of all of that stuff and being a teacher. And then I threw yoga teaching in there as well. And I didn't want to be living like that. And I really did a lot to make that not be the case. And I just wanted to inspire people to make little tiny changes in their own life, really.
So reward, like, it must have been really rewarding. And I think there a lot of people have that, like, it's a bit of a common theme. And I certainly, it, like, can really relate to what you were saying about that when you're at work and then you just got your head down, you're cracking on, it's almost like you're sort of plowing on, and then you're living for the weekend when you're not at work, and you're just throwing money at it because, you know, it'll make you feel a bit better. And yeah, like you say, it's that realization, isn't it, that it's not, that's not how you want to live. And it's quite powerful when it happens, where it's almost like you can blind yourself to it a little bit, but when you, it's there in the back of your mind, but then it sort of moves to the front, you've got to do something.
Yeah, you do have to do something. And it's usually which is sad but true, is usually something occurs to make us stop and take stock, or make us stop and slow down, whether that is completely being burnt out, like mentally and physically, or an illness kind of arises. That's, you know, our body's way of telling us, you know, that is enough now. And usually we wait for that signal rather than, you know, this isn't how I want, you know, noticing this isn't how I want to live. I want to be more mindful. I want to feel more connected, but I don't know how to do it. I don't know how to make those little changes. And that's what I try to do, just to inspire these little changes, because, and to not just inspire, because I think we can be inspired all day long. You know, if you saw my book collection and my podcast that I listen to, and, you know, we can be inspired all the time, but then we need to learn stuff, and we need to then feel empowered to actually make changes. Usually changes anyway, so that we can support our well-being, because it's too important not to. That's where I keep coming back to. It's too important not to take care of ourselves, or wait, I'll take care of myself at the weekend, or I'll take care of myself when the kids are bigger, or I just get through this next bit of stress. Yeah, that's not enough. And it's, no, it's difficult when it's within a teaching environment, because we have deadlines and we have certain times of the term that are particularly busy, and the everyday life of a teacher is particularly busy. And when I say teacher, I mean all people that work in schools. I truly do. It's just that doesn't roll off the tongue as easily as a teacher. But I mean all teaching staff, anyone that is in a school, and it can be properly overwhelming. And then we just go, okay, and the resistance comes, especially maybe when somebody like I come in, the resistance comes with, well, I don't have time and I'm too busy. And I was the same. Well, I can't, I'm too busy and I don't have the time to do whatever it is you're going to suggest. But that's where the empowerment, I think, comes in, and really taking a check of your own mental health and your own physical health and emotional health, and deciding whether you want to do something about it. Might not need to, but whether you want to do something about it, and setting some pretty secure boundaries.
And you did your TED talk on that subject. How was that experience, and how did that come about?
Yeah, so the whole thing, I think that the whole experience of it showed me how far I had come. And I, you know, that thing of you don't know how far you've come until you know how far you've come, because we can get stuck in our everyday life and how we feel. And a friend of mine did a TEDx talk in the year before I did, and she's somebody that has worked in schools. I really related to her. And one day in a conversation on messages, she just texted me the link to apply. And she's like, you should do this. And my stubbornness then kicks in. If somebody that I really respect and admire is suggesting that I do something, I really listened. And it was such a process, you know, of applying. And it was one of those things where I'm like, well, I might. And the application process, you know, once I'd started, I was in. I was either in or I was out, because it was such a long process. It involved a video, and it involved me selling myself and what I would talk about, and lots of writing, lots of words. So I did it. I sent the application because I felt like I had a lot to say. The theme was dream big. And I think as humans, let alone as teachers, we are maybe not encouraged to dream big, you know, because we are working so hard at appreciating our life as it is right now. And we can have both. I truly believe that you can be content and you can dream, and you can be content and you can appreciate everything about your life as it is, but you can still work towards your big dreams and hopes and goals, for sure. That doesn't mean that you're then not loving your life as it is, or liking your life, and you're just living in the future. You can have these two. So I wanted to share that. I wanted to share my story, even though it was quite painful to kind of go process it and go through it. But I did, and I applied, and I didn't really think that I would get, you know, I knew how many applications were going in. I didn't think that I would get a message back. And I did, and I remember I knew the date, and it was my birthday. I knew the date that we were all going to hear whether we were in or not. And I got an email to say that, yeah, I was in. And then that was exciting. A lot of it said, don't tell anyone. I was like, oh my gosh, this isn't me. I'm a sharer. So I couldn't tell anybody. I think I told my mum and my dad. So and then there was another long process of refining what I was going to talk about. They wanted to see everything. They wanted to approve everything, but also give you a little bit of freedom. I had to stick within the time and I had to learn it. So what I wanted to get across, my message, I couldn't read it. You know, once you stand on that red dot on a TEDx stage or a TED stage, you're on your own with a timer, big fat timer, with your time going down. That's it. And you can't see anything. So I had to learn it and I had to keep within the time because they were really strict about that. But it taught me a lot about myself. It taught me, I used rather than stubborn, I was like, I persevered and was consistent and I practiced and I enlisted some help from a friend of mine that, Christine, actually.
Christine who, from an earlier episode, Christine Blair, yes.
So from everything, you know, in all that she does, she also is great at public speaking, you know, because she is. So, you know, she helped me and I told my story. And when it came to the actual day, there was a lot of advertising around it. There was a lot of releasing who the speakers were. And it was all quite, you know, it was exciting. And maybe it was not the first time since this whole single mum thing that, you know, I became, that I was excited about something. I was, you know, excited to share this thing. You know, at that time, I think yoga teaching was being combined with being a school teacher. So everything just felt a bit challenging in that area. But this was something that was all for me and all, not for me, but all me and for hopefully as many people as I could get to. So I took my brother and one of my greatest friends from school, her and I, Kerry, we shared a class together and the two that we went to Norwich and turned up in the pouring, it was April. And just waited to see when I was going to be speaking, met a load of other people that were speaking that were amazing. And I got to spend the day watching everybody else's talks, being inspired because I was on at 5.
Oh,
6 and I was on at 5. So yeah, that was an experience in itself waiting.
But it was amazing. Did you know that it's got 114,000 views on YouTube?
No. So I was quite keen. I remember sharing when it had 5,000. When it had 500, I was excited. And then you know, my parents watched it and they cried and then they watched it a load of times. So it's like half the times is them. And then and sending it to all of their friends, you know, to watch, which was lovely. And then it kind of got to 5,000. I remember sharing that and I was buzzing about that. And then, yeah, it kept creeping up and up. And an Instagram page called Bored Teachers, they shared it. And they really put a lot of positivity behind my message and what I was saying. I got a lot of great comment. I mean, there's the rubbish comments too. Don't get me wrong. Obviously, I read them. Try not to take those to heart. Especially because these people, you know, some of the people were talking about what it looked like as well. Like, oh, that's, you know, just to, you know, listen.
Anyway, I didn't even look at the comments, to be honest. I just listened to it myself and watched it myself. But
there's a few on YouTube. I think it was more the social media thing when it got shared. And, you know, somebody said that I was annoying. And then I started talking about banging on about yoga and they started rolling their eyes and they stopped listening. Like, you didn't stop listening. I'm sure you listened, even if I annoyed you. But it created a reaction. And the positive comments that I got were just, oh, they were amazing. And it meant that I was reaching people all over the place. Board teachers, I think it's an Australian kind of page, but all over the place. And they were sending me messages as well about how it was a reminder that they needed in that moment, you know, to take care, and that it's okay to take care of yourself, and it is okay to, you know, there are these deadlines, there is all this stuff, but there is also your opportunity to say, okay, well, I need more time, or I need more support, or I can't do that in that time frame. You know, I want more help with time management or something. So hopefully it empowered people. That was my, I guess that was my dream, that I could empower people.
So then, you were telling them what they need, sort of knew in the back of their mind, but brought it to the forefront, and then they could act on it and make some changes if needed.
Yeah, make some changes, and these tiny little changes, you know, change happens in this everyday stuff we do. And it doesn't have to be big changes. I've made big changes in my life that doesn't have to be the case. You don't have to end relationships. You don't have to end the job that you are doing. but making these tiny little changes. And I gave some examples, and they are so simple. And when you first hear them, you might even be like resistant to hearing this stuff because you're like, well, I know this. And we do, we know it all. Nothing is brand new that's being shared, but it is the simple acts of drinking enough water, for example, which sounds so simple and a bit, you could brush that off. It makes a massive positive impact on your everyday life. Just see, you know, just seeing and checking in with your relationship with your phone, taking a couple of minutes, moments even, to be quiet and still in your everyday life. Practicing yoga was something that I would love for everybody to have access to practice, to have a go, to realize that it isn't all balancing on, you know, your head or flowing fast through poses. And it isn't just a gentle stretch either. It's a way of living, you know, and you could take all that you learn on your yoga mat out into your life. You know, to finding time to meditate. And again, that doesn't have to be that idea that we have in our mind of meditation. Breathing really well, taking the time to, you know, find out how you can breathe really well. These little things that you can do in your everyday life. I talk about affirmations, but that word doesn't sit very well with me. I see them as reminders. I have reminders all over my house of actual reminders of, you know, remember the girls' water bottles and their snack, otherwise that's a pain. Remember that they have a club on a certain day. But my reminders are, you know, remember to breathe. And the word breathe is in many places around my house. A reminder to drink water, because we forget and we power through. I noticed that with teachers massively, and just humans in general. So these positive, the way that we talk to ourselves are these affirmations, these reminders. And if we talk to ourselves positively, then our thoughts and our words, they become our actions, and our actions become our habits. And I feel that a lot. I feel that is very important.
So when you, what tipped you? I don't want to say tipped you over the edge. I don't mean that. But what made the transition from primary school and yoga to just yoga?
That was a really difficult decision, because not just the people-pleasing side of me did not want to let anybody down. And I had to really have really honest conversations with the people that I was working with, so that first of all, it didn't come as a shock, and it didn't. And I tried different things, but also really getting honest with myself. And I got to the point where I could not do it all. I didn't want to do it all. I probably could. I could have carried on. And I know that there are teachers, school teachers, that do that, and they parent and they have another job as well. I didn't want to do that anymore, because I recognized that my mind was trying to split itself in these different places, and they were just almost, I wasn't ever present. That is what it came to. I never felt like I was truly connected and truly present with what I was doing. I did a good job in all of the things that I was doing, including teaching yoga classes right at the beginning, right at the start. And I was in it when I was teaching, but I wasn't giving it the time around it. And the main part of that was I wasn't doing that with my family and with my two girls. I recognized that I was not present with them, and I was getting everything done, and from the outside I was ticking off all of the things that you do to have healthy, happy children, but I lost myself in all of that. And I wasn't connected not only to them, but to myself. That was the big one. Maybe along with them, I wasn't connected to myself. I was multitasking to within an inch of my life all the time. I had like a buzz about me, and not like a excited buzz, but almost like anxiety kind of buzz, that I only really remembered to even recognize when I lay down to attempt to go to sleep. So I had to make changes for my, definitely for my mental health, but for my physical health too. I couldn't physically do what I was doing. And there was one time I remember coming down the stairs. So I was in my house that I had, you know, spent a lot of time and energy creating and building and making lovely. And I came down the stairs, and on one of the particular days, I had so many bags at my door ready to leave for the next day. So I'd spent a lot of time preparing the next day, the night before. And this was my life. preparing to take the girls to the place they needed to go, ready to them for them to go to school. But I was teaching yoga after my school day, so I would have my yoga stuff, I'd have my school teaching stuff, and I would have the stuff for the girls. And inevitably, when I looked at that pile of stuff, I had to make trips to the car. I was like, this is too much. It's just too much. And I was kind of hurrying the girls. We never had any time. We didn't spend quality time together. And that's not to say that you need the school run, because could be quite honest with you, the school run could be gone from my life and that would be fine. Because it's not the dream. But the disconnection that I had with the kids was just, that was what did it. That was too much. So I had to change something, and it was either be letting go of yoga or letting go of being a school teacher. And yoga was what I loved. And that was where I had to follow my heart, even though I knew it would disappoint people and I wouldn't have that recognition of being a school teacher and that instant respect. Even I got a lot of, is that, what's your proper job though? When I would say that I was a self-employed yoga teacher, now fully self-employed, which has been like a year and a half now, totally clashed with lockdown. My big steps into the self-employed world fully, happened 4 or 5 months before lockdown. So not sure if it was a great time. In hindsight it is, but not sure at the time. And I really recognized how far I had come and how much respect I had actually gained when it was my parents that they asked me about it all the time now. They asked me about my business. They call it a business. And they had to learn quite a lot. They came on that journey with me so that they didn't just see it as a bit of a time out and a hobby that I was nurturing. They see it as a business now, which is which I really love. And when the girls ask me questions and want to know stuff about what I'm doing, that also makes me happy.
Yeah, it's important, isn't it, when people take it, like someone you respect, like my old boss used to just call it, oh, how's your yoga going? But then he was going to pick my brains about my website, and he had a look round it and he was like, oh, it's actually quite good. I don't know, he thought it was going to be rubbish. Sure I've talked about this on the podcast before. And then now he always says, like, because we're still in touch, he says, oh, how's your business? And he very much recognises it's a business, because we know it is, don't we? It's not just rocking up to the different places that you teach. It's all online even now, like switching up your laptop. It's way more than that. So it's good that when you get that recognition from people that are important to you, then that's nice.
Yeah, definitely. And that kept happening. And I was consistent. And I know I showed up consistently as myself. And I wanted to share like the honest side of it, of attempting to do the mum stuff, but be happy in yourself as well, not just doing stuff for the kids all the time. Quite honest that I don't love the park. It's something that I do. And if I can enlist a friend to join us, then it makes everything 1,000 times better. Getting that respect from my kids as well, and just people. I don't really have many relationships now with people that I used to work with in schools. That in hindsight was a very difficult time, and they were difficult. Some of those are difficult relationships, but the ones that I have maintained, which are a few, they're really important to me. So I think that's a big thing that I have learned in my business journey, I guess, is my relationships that I have with the people in my life now are so important to me, and I put in as much as I want back. I don't have any one-sided things going on.
No, that's good. So can you tell me a bit more about your Be Well membership group? Just explain, did you set that up at the pandemic, at the point of pandemic, like when did that start?
I remember I actually went to Thailand a few months before lockdown, and coming back from that, I don't know, it was kind of in the air, all of these news stories and everything.
Was that a teacher's retreat? Did you go with Dawn?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know you went there. It amazing? It looked amazing.
Yeah. It was beautiful. Christine and I went actually. So, and with Dawn, well, I mean, which is just a dream in itself.
Dawn Wright from episode 2 and Christine from, I think she was on episode 6. six. Well, I don't know. I'll look. Oh no, she was episode six. I've got it written down. Yeah. But yeah, I didn't know. So that was just before lockdown and everything, wasn't it?
Yeah, Dawn did. She was out there for a while teaching two retreats back to back. An incredible, like one of the, you know, if I think about the inspirational people and empowering people in my life, those two are right there. They are big influences in everything that I do now. And I got to spend, you know, 10 days with both of them, which was amazing. So coming back, and I set up a Facebook group called the Be Well Project before, you know, it was a Facebook group, and it was before that was when I started being a yoga teacher, and it was just a space to share some stuff and to create a bit of a community. And that had grown. I think there's around 400 members in there now, which is great. And then when lockdown happened, I had a week where there was that thing of the school that I taught at, my own class and the studio, hearing from them and being like, okay, this is happening. This is, you know, we're not doing this anymore. I couldn't teach there. So that there were two, that was like, okay, right. And I was self-employed. So I was like, okay, what on earth am I going to do? So I didn't have the school teacher bit. So one of my, and this has happened now three times throughout lockdown. So over the last 16 months or so, the first time right then was where I was like, I need to be a school teacher. This isn't going to work. So how can I go back to being a school teacher? Because I needed that steadiness. Didn't act on it. And then that did happen another twice through it when times got like, not times, everything felt hard. I set up online within a week. So I didn't want to stop. I didn't know what I was doing. Everyone started talking about Zoom. So I learned as I went. And I set up the Be Well, not even that membership, actually. I didn't set that up for a little while. I just set up a Tuesday night yoga class instead of the one that I was teaching for myself. And I think with the studio, when they got ready to teach live online, I did one a week for them as well. And that is how I started. And I taught it from where I'm sat now, which I know you can't see, but I'm sat in my kitchen. And I did it from there. I shifted all of my furniture outside. I've got, you know, a little space, really. I shifted all of my furniture outside. It was warm though, it was okay. And I taught from my kitchen with my phone. So from my phone, I don't even have a tripod at that point. I set it all up, balancing on a load of books and stuff. I'm sure loads of people did as well.
Yeah.
I just had a go, and I got, they were my busiest classes. That first kind of 6 weeks when everyone needed to feel a part of something in the most surreal time, maybe, that no one has ever experienced before. That's when I started. I just had my phone, I had a Zoom, and I had a website actually at this point, but I didn't really have much on there. It was very just for information side. And then it took probably about, you know, things were going well. I had that Tuesday class, and then I added a free class in an evening because I realized the stress people were under, and I wanted to offer something, you know, for free for a little while, you know, a chill out session. I did that from my lounge. And then I added an early morning class because I started to think, well, this is all going to stop soon, this online business. We're all going to go back to our lives before. What classes did I never do teach? And they were early morning classes because, first of all, I had kids asleep in bed and it's hard to get up. And I didn't think I would ever get busy classes. So I set up quarter to seven for half an hour because I found that when I went to classes, my attention span and my physical ability meant that I couldn't really, I didn't want to do much more than half an hour, 45 minutes at a push. So I added slowly over the course of a few months, set up a membership, which is just amazing. I absolutely love it. So I have my free stuff that I put out there, and now I have a membership, a monthly membership. So those people can come to all of my classes. We're all in it together. We have a chat before classes and a chat at the end. Anything that I try out, they can just come along to it. It's always included in the membership. So yeah, it was I really felt rewarded and really truly appreciated what everything that I was doing that weekend, that I remember putting that out and getting people subscribed to that membership. It was that, again, I really recognized how far I'd come. I was proud of myself.
Oh, you should be. So going back to in-person classes now, I see you doing a little bit outside. How is that going?
Yeah, so I haven't gone back to many in-person classes. I only do one in a studio, whereas before that was my main thing. I did maybe six, I think, in a studio. At one studio, I did another three in another studio and another one somewhere else. And then I did my own in a school hall. So I had a busy week of in-person, in-places classes.
How many would you say, Kelly, just out of interest?
I remember doing 10 plus like workshops, and then sometimes beginners courses kind of came in there as well. So yeah, I was doing 10. That was actually combined when I still did a couple of days school teaching. That was at the height of it. Yeah. So I did school teaching and about 10 classes, workshops and stuff, and then juggled the kids in and around that. And so now I do just that one class. And Christine and I, so Christine Blair, who I know you've had on here and you mentioned already before, she's one of my very best friends. And we teach outside together every week, come rain or shine. And anyone that's come to our classes knows they don't have to try and trail through social media or our websites to see if our classes are on or wait for a message. We are there. So we do one a week on a Tuesday at 6 in Campbell Park. And we've done it in the thunder and the storms. We've seen double rainbows. And now we get a bit of sunshine, which is
finally
exciting.
That's very bold. I was trying to do some outdoor classes. It wasn't happening because it was torrential rain. And I just thought, no, I'm not going to look. So it's very brave of you to do it, come rain or shine. It must be. Yeah. It takes a lot of dedication. And I'm sure your students are very happy with that.
Yeah, I think Christine and I both talk a lot about showing up, you know, showing up just as you are without anything having to be perfect, because truly believe perfect is not a thing. It's not an expectation to set ourselves. So we want to show up, you know, as we are suggesting people show up to. And then not only do we have that one, we've got a monthly Saturday class, you know, every month throughout the summer too. And again, our real focus is on community. A lot of people can't go to, for whatever reason, whether that is financial or just life-wise, can't make it to studios. And we wanted to create something that meant that people felt really free. They felt free and they felt able to come to a community feel class where we turn up as ourselves. We have a laugh and we try out poses, you know, that are challenging, but they're challenging for us too. And then sometimes we look around and people are joining in, they're having a go, other people are clapping and cheering them on. Sometimes people are just like, I'm just going to sit and I'm just going to watch you guys because this is awesome.
It sounds like, well, I know it doesn't just sound like, you've got really like a lovely friendship, very genuine. Like, how did you guys meet?
We do. It's a real special friendship of ours. I did my teacher training a year after Christy. We both did it at the same place. And as part of our training, you have to observe other teachers, as you know, teaching. And because Christine worked in the same studio that I was going to and doing my training, and I loved her classes. I loved the how genuine she was, and she just rocked up as she was. And we always had a really great session. I always felt good. So I wanted to go and observe her classes because I knew she was juggling too. I knew she had a corporate job and she was teaching classes outside of that as well. And, you know, a busy human. So, yeah, I just observed her class. And after one of them, we sat and chatted for a long time. And just there are some people that you just are okay sharing your personal rubbish that is going on. And we just seemed to do that. It wasn't a case of her being the teacher and me being the student anymore. It was just we found an equal footing. And I observed her a few more times and across my teacher training. And we just became friends. And yeah, and now we are firm friends. We go to many a festival together, although that's been a while. We have high hopes for this summer. We travel together and we put on retreats together, and we're just in it together. It's very much we share this Tuesday night class that we have. We share the teaching when we do them. We share the online retreats that we do as well. And I really recognize when I feel equal to somebody. And I find that is very important when I have been in places where I haven't felt that. So that's what we bring. We have an equalness, but we have very different sort of energies that we bring to everything as well, which is great. If anyone's ever, anyone watches Grey's Anatomy, which I am on series 12, and I have watched that in 6 months, which is, anyone that watches it knows that there was a lot. And there are two characters in there, and she is the yang to my Grey. And if anyone knows Grey's Anatomy, they will know that. They'll recognize that. And she's a very yang energy as well. So I hopefully bring a bit of yin to her too.
I see that, to be honest. That's good. How did you have a conversation about working together as like a collaboration, or is it something you just kind of fell into and thought, yeah, we like this? Because I think that's quite an interesting, it feels quite unique. There's not many teachers that I see that genuinely work together and hold regular classes, regular joint events. How does it work?
Yeah, I think it comes out of like mutual respect for each other. And you're right, it's very difficult to work with somebody and have that professional side, but also be, you know, you have the same kind of belief system and the same values and the same thing that you're wanting to get across to the people that come to our classes. Because to be honest, we have our schedule and sometimes we have to switch out who the teacher is. So we don't ever want to copy anything the other one's doing, but people know that they come and they will still get the same, like the same kind of experience, but they will still get, when one of us is teaching compared to the other, they'll still get that uniqueness as well. But it's not a case of people come just when it is a certain one of us teaching. We tend to just have the same people coming, whether, you know, more that they can make it or they can't because they have something going on. So we did have, we have our business meetings. They usually involve walking with kids and a dog and finding a park or a pub garden. To be honest, sometimes we've held very significant meetings there and just getting it. Yeah, it was a decision to work together and we had to keep our boundaries, check in with each other's boundaries often. And we check in like that all the time so that we keep that equal feel about it. Yeah.
I think it's a really unique model and I hope it continues to work well for both of you.
Thank you. I hope so.
Lastly, what are you most proud of in your life so far, Kelly?
What am I most proud of? I think I'm proud of my role as a single mum. That is probably what I'm most proud of. I'm proud of the business that I have created and that I can bring my authentic self. I truly hope that's what comes across to my business, but also to my mum life as well. You know, they are a part of my business, my girls. They see it all, you know, they see it. And I'm really honest with them, you know, about how I'm feeling, you know, in certain situations and listening to them. So I would say so far anyway, I would have to hold those two together. My single mumness and my building of a business.
Yeah, I think that's fair enough. And if you weren't a yoga teacher, what would you be?
I always wanted to be a physio. I thought they were really cool. I love learning about the body. I did quite a lot of it at university. And yeah, I wanted to be a physio. Pretty much because I still think they're all cool.
So we're moving on to quick fire questions now. Okay. So just say what you feel, no right or wrong. Late to bed or early to rise?
Oh, early to rise.
Favorite tune to dance to?
They're all cheesy ones, like probably something from Bon Jovi or some other rock stuff by Pink.
I love Pink.
Yeah.
Who do you look up to?
Oh my gosh, I look up to my parents. I look up to my friend Christine massively. I look up to that is a really great question. Who do I look up to? Do you know what? I look up to my kids. I respect them and I listen to them. And I truly hope it's the same the other way too.
Oh, I'm sure it is. It sounds like it is. What's your favorite film?
Top Gun.
Oh, are you excited about the new one?
Yeah, I am.
Nervously anticipating it.
Yeah, a little bit. Although I'd happily watch the other one over and over. All those 80s films.
On a scale of 1 to 10, how cool are you?
Oh, gosh. Depends who you ask. It depends on the day. Sometimes I'm a solid 7. Sometimes the girls would both roll their eyes at you and say about a 2. Depends on the day.
Mountainside or lakeside?
Lake.
Tom Hanks or Leonardo DiCaprio?
Ooh. Tom Hanks.
What's your star sign?
Sagittarius.
Who would you swap lives with just for a day?
Oh, who would I swap lives with? I don't know. Who would I swap lives with? I'm going to say one of my kids. Definitely just for the day. I'm going to figure out what I'm like.
Countryside or city?
Countryside.
If you owned a yacht, what would you call it?
I was going to say Carpe Diem then. I wouldn't, because that's a bit cliche, but something along those lines.
What's at the top of your bucket list, Kelly?
Oh, don't tell my parents, because I said I wouldn't do it, but jumping out of a plane. Over a beach, though. Over a beach, not here.
Not in Milton Keynes.
No.
Describe your baddest and brightest leggings.
Some of my leggings are so boring. I've got some bright pink ones purely because my brand is Pretty Pink, is like bold, hot pink. They're too bright. They're too bright. Everyone puts their shield, their arm, their hand over their eyes.
Favourite place in the whole wide world?
Mallorca.
Good choice. And yeah. Favourite yoga pose?
So I'm not going to lie, I love a child's pose. I love a handstand as well. My favourite pose is triangle. All of the triangles. Revolve it, regular triangle. Yeah, that's it.
That's a good one. It encompasses a lot, doesn't it? Yeah. That's a good one. Oh, thank you for that. Just brings us on to Savasana sounds. So what is your favourite music or sound to listen to when you're relaxing? Have you got a track you can recommend to the listeners?
Yeah, my favourite ones are by Lapsley. I first heard it in a yoga class, and my favourite of theirs is Painter. I think they have one called Station as well, and generally they're all great, but there's something I know for a lot of students, I played that as my song in so many of my classes consistently for a long period of time, so I know that they will probably think of me then as well. So Lapsley, Painter is probably my go-to.
Nice. Thank you for sharing that. I've not heard of them. Oh. I want to say them, him, her.
Not sure.
So this is so good. I've got a lot of recommendations to go through and have a proper listen to. So that's great. Thank you. And generally, just thank you for chatting to me, Kelly. Like, it's been really lovely getting to know you a little bit better. Listeners, you can contact Kelly via email. Tell her what you thought of the podcast, if you've got any questions for her. I'll also put your link to your TED talk in the episode notes so people can have a look at that. But your email address, or Kelly's email address, is hello@kellyhopkinsonyoga.co.uk. She's also to be found on Facebook and Instagram, Kelly Hopkinson Yoga, on both of those. And also her Be Well Project, on the Facebook group. The free Facebook group for anyone to join is at the Be Well Project. And you can find her there.
Yeah.
Great. Thank you so much.
Oh, you're so welcome. It's been a total pleasure. So thank you.
You've been listening to That Yoga Woman's podcast with me, Jules Buchanan. If you like the show, please tell your friends about it, share it on social media, rate it, write a nice review, and subscribe to That Yoga Woman's podcast. Links and information can be found on the episode page in the podcast section of my website, www.thatyogawoman.com/podcast. If you'd like to show some support for the podcast, you can do that through PayPal. The donation link is www.paypal.me/thatyogawoman. The last thing I'll mention is my line of organic cotton yoga-inspired tops. I designed a small range of best tees and sweatshirts that are perfect to teach or do yoga in. Have a look online, check out my shop on my website, www.thatyogawoman.com/shop. Have a look around my store and make an order. See you soon.